Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I will be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. The cover story this week, A New Generation, A New Workplace. Starting this year, Gen Z will make up a larger portion of the U.S. workforce than baby boomers. But are companies ready for this change? Before the cover story, we'll read the biz section and the reporter pages. The biz section is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. The top story, North Hills sale makes the list. A new report showing the sale of a property at North Hills ranked 23rd nationally for commercial office sales highlights the rising impact of the Triangle and the changing nature of commercial real estate. In fourth quarter 2023, Crescent Real Estate of Fort Worth, Texas paid Lionstone Investments of Houston $132.9 million for the Midtown Plaza property in Raleigh. The 12-story property hovers over the Beltline and is home to Allscripts and formerly SunTrust. Kane Realty Corp. of Raleigh and KBS Realty Advisors built the Class A office building in 2017 and sold it in 2018 for $127 million. What's telling is that the 2018 sale of Midtown Plaza didn't come anywhere near the nation's top 50 office deals as ranked by Commercial Cafe. In fact, number 50 that year was a $255 million sale, and no transactions in North Carolina made the list, dominated by New York, Boston, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. In 2019, the only sale in North Carolina to make the list was the whopping $436 million that Raleigh's Highwoods Properties paid for the Bank of America Tower in Charlotte. That deal ranked number 27. But two forces are in play. First and foremost is the dramatic change in the commercial real estate market after the pandemic sparked the work-from-home movement. Now those billion-dollar towers feel like battleships in an age of aircraft carriers. The 2023 list had only two deals in the U.S. for over $500 million. But second is the shift to markets such as the Triangle and the flight to quality that's a hot topic in the world of CRE. Office properties that feature amenities such as a walkable, accessible community are the priority. In Durham last year, the $113 million sale of the Research Lab building and the Carmichael building property from Longfellow Real Estate Partners to Brookfield Properties ranked number 30 on the Commercial Cafe list. Nowell's to end epic run in Raleigh. Like so many in Raleigh, Biz grabbed its first suit, charcoal gray of course, at Nowell's after college, and so it's bittersweet to hear the men's store with the sweeping assortment and welcoming atmosphere will be closing. The Nowell family began selling men's apparel in downtown in 1921, became a charter member of Cameron Village in 1949, and expanded to other lines that included the preppy and popular Hooper stores for women. Nowell's left what is now the Village District in 2002, but has remained a staple at its location at 1632 North Market Drive. Nowell's has always known its audience, mixing in suits and jackets that fit more formal times with preppy, relaxed fare such as Peter Miller. Business has actually been pretty good, says Mark Howell, whose grandfather Arthur started the business. The problem, though, is Mark Lubet and Schooner Nowell are all in their 70s, and there is no one in the fourth generation to take over. We are a family business, and basically we've run out of the family, Mark Nowell says. The store will sell off its remaining merchandise in the weeks ahead. And come to think of it, that suit from 1983 does feel a little tight. Cultural ties. French group visits RTP. Leaders of a technology park in the Côte d'Azur region of France visited Research Triangle Park recently. Sophia Antipolis has 80,000 employees representing 2,500 companies, making it the largest research center in Europe. It's just inland from the French Riviera towns of Cannes and Antibes. Ryan Combs, the executive director of the Research Triangle Regional Partnership, notes on LinkedIn that there are plenty of similarities between Sophia Antipolis and RTP and says it was exciting to brainstorm on how we can increase collaboration and partnerships between the Sophia Antipolis ecosystem and ours. The Triangle already has some ties to the south of France, with BioMérieux having a big presence in the market and headquartered just outside Lyon. Here at Biz, we are all for collaborating with Sophia Antipolis, maybe over wine at a cafe in Cannes. NBA commissioner takes on new role. If you think you have a busy job, imagine what the next 3 years will be like for Adam Silver. Silver, the commissioner of the National Basketball Association, will begin a three-year term as chair of the Duke University Board of Trustees July 1st. He's been a board member since 2015 and has served as vice chair and a member of the executive committee since 2021. Silver graduated from Duke's Political Science Department in 1984 and earned a law degree from the University of Chicago. He served as a federal district court law clerk and later a law firm associate before joining the NBA in 1992 and becoming commissioner in 2014. Silver, in 2023, delivered a commencement address to graduating students. Fayetteville gets a sweet new shop. A dessertery known for its cinnamon rolls has launched a new location outside the Research Triangle. Cinnaholic, which has locations across the East Coast as well as in Raleigh and Cary, opened a store recently at 1928 Skybow Road in Fayetteville. The cinnamon roll chain is in the process of expanding nationally. According to its website, Cinnaholic is planning to open its first locations in California, Texas, and a handful of other states. And finally, in Raleigh, St. Augs faces rising concerns. St. Augustine University suffered a blow February 27th when the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges denied its appeal, meaning the Raleigh school will lose its accreditation. Without accreditation, a university is not eligible to receive federal funds, and its students are unable to receive federal student aid. That federal support is essential for a school like St. Augs. The university says it has taken, quote, significant steps, unquote, to address the issues and also plans to file an injunction over the decision. Turning now to the reporter pages, we'll start with On Finances and Travel, written by Lauren Onosorge. Her top story this week, rising costs catch up to NC Theater. The North Carolina Theater has filed for bankruptcy and is suspending performances until further notice. The theater company, housed within the Martin Marietta Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Raleigh, claims to have just under $205,000 worth of assets and more than $2.1 million in debts, according to its Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing. John Zaloom, NCT board chair, says, "It's just been difficult to reemerge from COVID-19. We had rising costs and we couldn't raise funds to keep up with that, and part of that was having to get back on track with sponsorships and theater goers," he says. "Meanwhile, the costs were going up, and we had debt already that was hanging over us. It was just more than we could catch up to." Zaloom says the bankruptcy came down to the theater's inability to raise enough funds for its next show, which was supposed to be the Tony Award-winning musical Rent. The theater had been working to cut costs, such as switching to a smaller space, the A.J. Fletcher Theater, for recent productions. The model was working. The theater was full for productions of The Color Purple and Elf, but it just wasn't happening fast enough, he says. The theater is pushing to terminate key contracts from leases to employment. The action includes an agreement with Eric Woodall, named Executive Artistic Director in September. In a court motion to terminate Woodall's contract, NCT says that doing so is a proper use of its business judgment. On Six Forks Road, widening of road to impact businesses. Business owners, shoppers, diners, and residents in North Hills may see relief from traffic congestion in the years ahead now that funding has been allocated to widen Six Forks Road. But in the near term, construction will likely snarl traffic. The Raleigh City Council in February voted to approve the project, which also includes improvements for pedestrians and cyclists. Overall, it's estimated to cost $56.1 million and is part of the city's Complete Streets strategy. Mexico City flight at risk. Plans for Raleigh-Durham International Airport's nonstop flight to Mexico City are in jeopardy. The U.S. Department of Transportation recently suspended an agreement between Delta Airlines and Aeromexico. A joint filing submitted by the airlines identifies the RDU Mexico City flight Aeromexico announced in November as a route that could be suspended if the agreement is terminated. And finally, in Cary, employees sue SAS over losses after retirement plan underperforms. Cary's largest employer is getting slapped with a federal lawsuit over its 401k plan. The complaint accuses analytics firm SAS and its board of mismanaging employees' retirement plans, losing hundreds of millions in value in the process. The lawsuit was filed on behalf of former SAS employees Betsy Engstrom, John Stanna, and Randall Wagner, and named SAS, its board, and its retirement committee as defendants. The plan held more than $3.6 billion at the end of 2021, but $2.8 billion at the end of 2022. SAS, according to the suit, did not exercise appropriate judgment in scrutinizing each investment option to ensure it was prudent. SAS declines to comment on the case. The lawsuit also points to a group of target date funds from J.P. Morgan that, despite consistent underperformance, the company continued to offer as part of the plan. The On Healthcare and Higher Ed column is written by Zach Ezone. His top story this week, Wake Med to expand after approvals. A major expansion is in the works for Wake Med North Hospital in Raleigh. Wake Med has secured approval to add hospital beds to facilities in Wake County, beating out competing proposals from Duke Health and UNC Health. State regulators in January approved Wake Med's applications to add the beds in Cary and North Raleigh and denied the proposals by Duke Health and UNC Health. The approval means Wake Med can move forward in developing a 121,000-square-foot patient tower at Wake Med North Hospital on Falls of Neuse Road. The five-story tower would include 35 acute care beds and 15 observation beds. The Raleigh-based health system estimates a total capital cost of about $157.8 million. The state has identified a need for 44 more acute care beds in Wake County, and the system's applied to the NC Department of Health and Human Services to fill the need. Wake Med estimates that the tower would be operational in October 2027, according to the original project application documents. The hospital will be licensed for 112 total acute care beds, which includes 6 neonatal intensive care unit beds. Wake Med also received approval to add no more than 9 beds at Wake Med Cary Hospital for about $1.8 million. Wake Med plans to convert 9 existing observation beds to licensed general medical surgical beds, according to project application documents. State regulators denied proposals from Duke Health and UNC Health for the hospital beds. State regulators said all 4 applications met the statutory and regulatory criteria that are part of the Certificate of Need application process. However, in a comparative analysis of various factors, state regulators found Wake Med's proposals to be more effective in more categories. State regulators determined that Wake Med's applications were more superior in terms of geographic accessibility and historical utilization. Wake Med has a higher percentage of acute care beds in Wake County that are utilized compared to Duke Health and UNC Health. Wake Med is also facing a larger deficit of hospital beds by 2026 than the other health systems. And speaking of this bed battle between UNC Duke and Wake Med, more than 2 years after its initial approval, a proposed UNC Health Hospital and Research Triangle Park remains entangled in the courts. The health systems in 2021 and 2022 received approvals to build out the hospital, beating out competing bids from Duke Health, which filed appeals contesting both decisions, initiating a process with the North Carolina Office of Administrative Hearings. An administrative law judge affirmed the state's decision to approve UNC Health's initial application to develop 40 acute care beds at a new hospital in RTP. Meanwhile, a judge in July vacated the additional 34 beds that were awarded to UNC Health, citing a procedural error related to the NC Department of Health and Human Services not holding an in-person public hearing. Both applications have since gone to the NC Court of Appeals, which has not yet made a decision on either case. Storage firm plans $80 million project in Nash County. As North Carolina's life sciences industry continues to grow, a company specializing in storage solutions is planning a multi-building campus in Nash County. GXP Storage is developing a campus that will serve as its international headquarters. Over a decade, the company plans to invest $80 million and hire nearly 100 employees. The company, managed by Jeff Johnson and John Rufty, is developing a 30-acre campus in Middlesex Corporate Center, an industrial park owned by Nash County. It is located a little more than 20 minutes from the Raleigh Beltline. Nash County Commissioners in October agreed to sell the land and an existing shell building for about $4.6 million. Turning now to the retail and restaurant section, compiled and written by Laura Brummett. Her top story, Raleigh Restaurants Sold as Owner Retires. The owner of a popular lunch spot for office workers in downtown Raleigh is retiring and selling the business. Sosta Cafe's owner, Jerome Locke, is retiring after running the business for 18 years. The new owner, Jen Solidarios, is planning to keep the business operating as Sosta Cafe. Everything will remain as it is, including the menu, Locke says. Locke, who's from France, opened Sosta Cafe in 2006. Located at 130 East Davy Street, the restaurant serves breakfast, lunch, and coffee. Locke hired brokers from VR Business Sales to locate a buyer. He sold the business for $145,000, including the brand name, equipment, and website. The listing for the cafe showed the business's annual sales at $312,000 with cash flow at $92,000. The restaurant is 1,161 square feet with additional sidewalk seating, and its monthly rent is $2,806, according to the listing. Locke has run the business with just two employees. With his retirement, he's planning a move to the North Carolina mountains. Finding a buyer who valued Sosta Cafe was his main priority. My biggest desire was for the place to continue as it is because of all the relationships I've built with customers over the years, he says. I truly treasure them. The cafe is open weekdays from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., relying on the office crowd. Foot traffic has started to come back since the pandemic dip, Locke says, though he doesn't expect it to ever return to pre-pandemic levels. Sosta Cafe will survive because of its host of loyal customers, Locke said. Raleigh property to become boutique hotel. This is in Glenwood South. The site of a future Moxie Hotel at 501 Northwest Street in Raleigh has been sold. Vision Hospitality Group purchased the 0.24-acre lot for $4.6 million recently, according to Wake County property records, paying $440 per square foot. The sale comes a year after plans were filed with the city to build a 9-story, 169-key hotel under the Marriott-owned Moxie name. Those plans remain under review by the city. Turnbridge Equities of New York sold the property. The parcel is part of a larger assemblage by Turnbridge, including the historic Creamery building. The recent sale price was higher than the previous sales and above the property's assessed value of $1.79 million, according to Wake County property records. Turnbridge purchased the site in 2020 for $3.7 million. In Cary, AutoZone to open in former Pier 1 location. AutoZone is continuing its expansion in the Triangle with a new store filling a vacant space left behind by Pier 1 Imports in 2020. Located at 1819 Walnut Street, the store already has a large AutoZone sign. The building, known for its angular storefront design, has sat empty since 2020 when Pier 1 filed for bankruptcy and closed all its stores. The property is owned by A&C Ventures, Inc., a real estate investment firm based in Sonoma, California. A&C Ventures purchased the property for $1.46 million in 1998. The lot is 1 acre and sits in a prime location at the entrance of Crossroads Plaza Shopping Center. The Greater Triangle Growth section is written by Ben Tobin. His top story is about Japanese life sciences firm picking Sanford. A Japanese life sciences company has selected Sanford for a new pharmaceutical manufacturing complex, a $200 million investment that could create more than 100 high-paying jobs. Kyowa Kirin North America, a subsidiary of pharmaceutical manufacturing company Kyowa Kirin Group of Tokyo, will make the large investment in Sanford on 75 acres within Helix Innovation Park at the Brickyard, a new industrial park by local development group Helix Ventures that covers 895 acres in northern Lee County along U.S. Highway 15501. The North Carolina Department of Commerce's Economic Investment Committee approved roughly $2 million worth of incentives to lure the project during a February 27th meeting. Previously, the Sanford City Council and the Lee County Board of Commissioners approved incentives worth $3.86 million and roughly $4.7 million, respectively. The company was referred to as Project BioBloom before being revealed February 27th. The investment calls for 102 full-time jobs over 3 years with average wages of at least $91,496. Jimmy Randolph, president and CEO of the public-private Sanford Area Growth Alliance, said during a meeting of the Lee County Board of Commissioners recently that the minimum paying job for the company's Sanford facility would be $60,000 and that the company first visited Sanford and 11 other sites in North Carolina in June of last year. The company says the new facility will leverage the latest technologies to support the manufacturing of biologic products for targeted clinical and commercial use. Our continued commitment to drug discovery and the development of novel medicines using new modalities, such as antibody-drug conjugates, ADCs, biospecific antibodies, cell and gene therapies, requires us to expand and advance our manufacturing capabilities, Kiowa Kieran said in a statement. Fayetteville firm opens in Sanford. A Fayetteville company that offers building solutions is opening a new space in Sanford after acquiring a building in the fast-growing city. CHS Investors, an LLC tied to Tolliver Parks, the CEO of Parks Building Solutions, purchased a 6,000-square-foot building on 11.89 acres at 1490 Comfort Lane in February for $2.85 million, according to Lee County deed records. Madeline Ellithorpe, the showroom and marketing manager for the company, says that there will be a showroom space in the Sanford facility. She says the company has hired around 15 employees to work there and plans to open in March. In Johnston County, developer behind Dollar General stores buys more land. A developer that's behind hundreds of Dollar General stores across the country is once again investing in Johnston County. An LLC tied to development group Capital Growth Buchalter of Birmingham, Alabama, bought 2.85 vacant acres off Highway 42 east of Interstate 40 in Johnston County, according to deed records filed in February. The land at 4800 NC Highway 42 sold for $5.65 million. In August, the group purchased a little under 1.3 acres in Selma near Interstate 95 and JR Road for more than $2 million. It's unclear what Capital Growth Buchalter plans to do with either property. Representatives of the company have not responded to requests for comment. Capital Growth Buchalter has developed residential and commercial real estate projects, including approximately 800 Dollar General locations in 15 states over a 25-year period. The final reporter section is Kaylee Thompson's section on real estate. Change is coming for Raleigh Tower. With Wells Fargo vacating its space in one of downtown Raleigh's most prominent towers, the building's owner is reimagining how to use some of the space. Highwoods Properties has big plans for its headquarters at the 150 Fayetteville Street building, which is the Wells Fargo Capital Center, including in turning the Wells Fargo Bank branch on the ground floor into state-of-the-art amenities, CEO Todd Klink said on a recent fourth-quarter earnings call. Highwoods will try to find a new tenant or tenants to fill the 60,000 square foot of office space that Wells Fargo will vacate at the end of October. Chief Financial Officer Brendan Marana says Highwoods was aware Wells Fargo would vacate its space at the end of its lease term when Highwoods bought the 29-story, 550,000 square foot building for $148 million in 2021. Highwoods plans to take the 16,000 square foot space that holds the Wells Fargo branch at the corner of Fayetteville and Hargett Streets and create a unique customer lounge that will be a commute-worthy amenity core to our work placemaking efforts, Marana says. In a separate initiative, a portion of the building's ground floor fronting Fayetteville Street will have a new restaurant concept from LM Restaurants of Raleigh, according to Marana. It will include all-day options and incorporate the adjacent Bagwell Plaza into its plans. Permits issued by the city in August and October show plans for a 5,552-square-foot full-service restaurant with a new freestanding exterior shade arbor at the plaza. One of the permits is for illuminated wall signs that will read 150/Fayetteville and will be on the Wilmington Street facade of the building. A Highwoods brochure advertising the space before LM Restaurants came on board identified opportunities for the indoor plaza space and activating the plaza, including a bar, retail spaces, open kitchen, outdoor dining, fireplace, covered seating, and a stage for outdoor events. LM Restaurant is investing in Fayetteville Street as owner Lou Moshikos recently bought the mixed-use building at 227 Fayetteville Street after the previous owner sold it back to the lender. Raleigh office building sold after securing long-term lease. A real estate firm has sold an office building in Raleigh for well above its assessed value after securing a long-term lease, a rare achievement in today's real estate market. Daniel Walzer, vice president of acquisitions for Raleigh's APG Capital, says the company had received several offers for the property at 2625 Appliance Court in Northeast Raleigh, located near Capitol Boulevard, just outside the Beltline. Initially, APG worked with the buyer, who eventually backed out of the deal. That led to its re-engagement with William and Marcia of Florida, owners of Georgia-based MLU Services, who bought the building in for $9.5 million, according to deed records. APG Capital has negotiated with the U.S. General Services Administration for a 10-year lease after GSA had done shorter leases for 30 years. After securing the longer lease, APG Capital put the building on the market. And finally, details emerge for a project near RDU. The next phase of a large business park near Raleigh-Durham International Airport has been revealed, even as construction is yet to begin on the first phase. Merritt Properties of Maryland recently filed updated site plans with the town of Cary for Phase 2 of its 142-acre RDU business park. Phase 2 will have four buildings totaling 244,300 square feet. A construction timeline hasn't been set yet, as the company is still working through the site review process with the town for both phases. The company filed initial site plans for Phase 1 and 2 in 2022. And now for this week's cover story. A new generation, a new workplace. As baby boomers age out of the workforce, the goals and ambitions of Gen Z will have a rising impact on the U.S. economy. Laura Brummett is the writer of this story. Just keep applying. That's what Pruthvi Chodasetti tells himself as he scrolls through his LinkedIn feed and sees his friends announcing full-time job offers and post-grad plans. Chodasetti is a senior at UNC Chapel Hill from Cary. And as of February, his next step isn't yet clear. When he graduates in May, Chodasetti will be facing a job market whirling with uncertainty, change, and opportunity. His generation, known as Gen Z, is facing a different world than generations past. A more progressive culture is seeping into the corporate world. Society is forever changed from the pandemic. Futuristic technologies, such as artificial intelligence, are no longer far-out concepts. Like the world Gen Z is entering, the individuals are different, too. Ranging in age from 12 to 27, the generation is known for caring about social causes such as diversity initiatives and sustainability, and have been coined as digital natives after growing up with the internet at their fingertips. And corporations hiring from this generation will start to feel the effect. Starting this year, Gen Z will make up a larger portion of the U.S. workforce than baby boomers, who are ages 60 to 78, according to a forecast by Glassdoor. And that workforce has a different makeup than 40 years ago. Some industries, such as construction and nursing, are begging for workers. Others, like professional services, are cutting positions. For Chodasetti, a job in his desired field isn't guaranteed, despite having 3 internships, 4 certifications, and a minor in media and journalism, padding his resume. The senior will graduate with a Bachelor of Science degree in Information Sciences with plans to become a UX designer. This past month, I've talked to a bunch of alumni that work at Adobe as UX designers, he says. They told me it's going to be very difficult to find a job right now, but just take whatever you can get. He interned last summer in a UX design role at Eversana InTouch, a large marketing agency based in Kansas City, Missouri. But joining the firm full-time isn't likely for Chodasetti. Some of the employees he worked with over the summer have been laid off, he says. Still, Chodasetti continues to send off applications, hopeful he'll find his dream role. Just keep applying, he repeats. In generations past, a notebook and a pen were required materials for attending a college class. Walk into a college classroom today, and every student will be typing away at their laptop on their desk, no piece of paper in sight. Much has changed since the C-suite members of today were sitting in a classroom, including the sheer number of college students. Gen Z students who earned a bachelor's degree from one of the University of North Carolina system schools in 2022 and 2023 year were among 42,995 graduates. Comparatively, a millennial who graduated in the 2012-2013 year was one of 36,536, and a Gen X person graduating in the 2001 to 2002 year would have been one of 32,758. More college graduates can benefit local companies such as engineering firms by adding qualified individuals to the talent pool. but having more qualified peers means more competition for Gen Zers seeking entry-level roles. That pressure led Chaudhary to try to seek out digital certifications and courses to add to his resume, hoping to stand out. That's a common move among his friends, as is completing multiple internships before graduation, he says. Those extracurricular certificates and internships are what some recruiters are paying more attention to, even more than a college degree. That's true for Javier Tirado Montero, manager of North America's early career recruiting for Lenovo. In the past couple of years, we're moving toward skills-based hiring, Tirado Montero says. We're starting to see less of an emphasis on the degree type or the degree title, as long as they're meeting the qualifications for the role and really understanding those essential skills. Hiring managers are looking for grit, curiosity, and ambition from candidates, he says, instead of the name of a prestigious college or a high grade point average. That approach allows Lenovo to bring in diverse pools of new hires, says Corey Christensen, senior manager of the Lenovo Accelerated Sales Rotational Program and Talent Development. Gen Z's help with addressing skill gaps that we have on our teams. Gen Z is also the most racially and ethnically diverse generation that we have, so they bring a lot of thought leadership, she says. It also helps us from a workforce perspective. Their generation, they're driving innovation and transformation into our business. The new year began with a string of layoff announcements, building on a trend that started in 2023. Companies that went on hiring sprees during the pandemic are now trimming costs. That includes several major companies with triangle presences, such as Google, Cisco, and IBM. Others like EY pushed back start dates for new hires, many being Gen Z students and recent graduates. The outlook may be bleak for college students hoping to work in tech or consulting after graduation, but other industries see more job openings than applicants. The architecture, engineering, and construction industry is still steady in the Southeast, particularly in the Triangle. Local companies such as Kimley Horn are hiring for full-time positions and internship programs. The nursing shortage has intensified in the U.S. over the past 2 years, with demand for Gen Z age nurses growing as baby boomers retire and require more care. Demand for nurses and healthcare workers is especially high in the Triangle, where multiple large health systems serve the region. And for skilled trades, such as welding, mechanics, and plumbing, demand is as high as ever. Maria Smith Overman, Director of Construction Trades and Assistant Dean of Building Engineering and Skilled Trades at Durham Technical Community College, is seeing just that. In the skilled trades, there are still so many jobs, she says. A lot of our students are getting jobs before they graduate. If they want a job, they're going to get one. The community college is seeing enrollment ups overall, and many trades classes have a waiting list. Though Durham Tech has students of all ages, Gen Z enrollment remains strong, Smith Overman says. The school is getting calls and emails inquiring about programs for Gen Z students from parents, high school counselors, and ministers, she says. Durham Tech is also keeping its Gen Z students in mind when shaping the curriculum. Employers have told the school that the younger graduates need help honing their soft skills. The school has integrated teachings to help students with customer service, showing up on time, and communicating with the team. Gen Zers in skilled trades are likely to spend more time around older generations, as many of the roles require trainees to learn from those who've been in the field for decades. Many of the positions in the industry are largely the same as they were 20 years ago, Smith Overman says. But not all Gen Z students want to start at the bottom of a company totem pole. Compared to previous generations, Gen Z seems to be more career-oriented, Smith Overman says. The first thing they want to know is how much money they can make and where they can get a job, she says. They also want to know, how can I be an entrepreneur? They want to be in an upper-level position. All ages of Gen Z have grown up with some form of technology in their hands at a young age, from tablets to iPod touches to smartphones. Evolving technology makes sense to the generation that is used to annually upgrading their tech and downloading the latest apps. It's no surprise that Gen Zers are the most comfortable with generative AI platforms like ChatGPT. Salesforce released its generative AI snapshot research at the end of last year after surveying more than 4,000 people aged 18 or older across the U.S., United Kingdom, Australia, and India. Gen Z proved to be the most invested in generative AI, with 70% of respondents using the technology and 58% saying AI helps them make informed decisions. Gen Z is paving the right path for generative AI. It saves time, keeps them organized, and is considered fun to use, the study says. Though the generation is seen as championing AI, Gen Z is also the most likely to face negative effects from the technology. In a study by the LinkedIn Economic Graph Research Institute, Gen Z is most exposed to having their jobs disrupted by generative AI, as the new technology is more likely to be able to handle entry-level jobs. Companies are already responding to AI capabilities and searching for ways to cut costs by replacing workers with the technology. Places such as Dropbox, IBM, and BuzzFeed are already cutting jobs, citing AI as a reason. Still, Gen Z students are pushing forward, aiming to use their AI expertise as an asset. More and more, we're seeing candidates coming in with a lot of AI experience. They're really on the front end of the tech industry with certifications and university programs designed for this. Lenovo's Torado Montero says, we're seeing a lot of preparation from talent and interest in AI as well. While baby boomers were known for spending decades at a company, a thirst for entrepreneurship is a Gen Z-wide characteristic, according to Michael Pankowski, co-founder of Pankowski & Company and Gen Z expert. Tougher competition, securing certain jobs, threats of layoffs, and familiarity with the Internet are combining to fuel the generation's entrepreneurial streak, he says. You can't completely guarantee one of those cushy software engineering jobs that you could 5 to 10 years ago, Pankowski says. Gen Z is an entrepreneurial generation, and you're going to see a lot more try to start their own companies or their own thing on the side. While Gen Z is pushing to change some corporate norms, shifting to remote work is not on their agenda. Shifting to a virtual work environment was a relatively easy transition for those already years into the workforce, with relationships long forged between coworkers and an understanding of workflow and expectations in place. But for the elder portion of Gen Z, the remote environment meant missing key in-person interactions at internships and first jobs. Gen Zers who are remote, it's much more difficult for them to make some of those relationships in the workplace, Pankowski says. You have to take things into your own hands by setting up Zoom calls and making opportunities for yourself that might come more naturally and smoothly if you were in the workplace. Gen Z is the least likely among all workforce generations to apply to jobs that are fully remote, according to the State of the Labor Market report published by LinkedIn in 2023. But the jobs that are the most appealing are purpose-driven, Pankowski says. Gen Z is paying close attention to company values and factoring in things like sustainability initiatives and choosing a job. Offering employee resource groups that allow employees to connect with others are popular as well. When Chota Setty is combing job boards looking for places to apply, he's looking for more than just the responsibilities or the pay. A positive work environment and having a work-life balance is at the top of the list. The biggest thing I do when looking at a job is read a lot of employee reviews on experiences working at these companies, Chota said, he says. There are a lot that have stood out to me, things like managers that don't acknowledge your work. I don't think anyone wants to work in an environment that puts you down or treats your work like it isn't worth it. The Editor's Notebook column is written by Managing Editor-in-Chief Saugata Mukherjee. As I was sifting through our quarterly space publication that came out just a couple of weeks ago, I was looking at the vacancy rate of some of the office buildings in the area. About 15% of the Triangle's 62.4 million square feet of office space currently needs tenants. The vacancy rate differs based on location, anywhere from 28% in North Durham to about 5% in southern Wake County. In the past week, the drumbeat of owners unable to keep servicing their debt on office buildings is getting louder. Atom, a commercial real estate research firm, cites commercial foreclosures are on the rise quickly. In May 2020, there were 141 foreclosures. In January, it was at 635. Banks and other financial services firms do not want empty office buildings in their asset portfolio, because then they have to find individuals, groups, companies, and vulture investors to take them off their books. That's where private and public schools may have an opportunity. A few months ago, the New York Times cited numbers from JLL that stated dozens of higher education institutions had bought office buildings since 2018. In fact, by JLL's count, 49 four-year private colleges and 16 four-year public universities have bought office buildings around the country to support classroom expansions, consolidate administrative offices, and embark on tech-heavy centralized functions. K through 12 public and private school officials and charter schools should look at local office buildings to do that. I understand that the buying action on office buildings has come from colleges, but K through 12 and primarily middle and high schools have an opportunity here. For one, it could be an excellent solution for areas that constantly add new schools to keep up with the population increase. Wake County is one of them. In 2022, Wake County commissioners approved a $530 million school bond package that, among other things, included construction of five new elementary, middle, and high schools. But is there an opportunity for the county to explore looking at office buildings around the region that could be used as a high school? The answer is yes. Governments in other countries have been doing it for decades. I went to school with 10,000 total students, grades 1 through 12, that housed some 3,000 high school students in a seven-story building with more than 70 classrooms. It's different for sure, but interesting times require innovative thinking. Well, it is not that innovative if governments worldwide have been doing it for years. We want to avoid a scenario in our countries, in our counties, where office building owners are dumping their buildings on banks, who in turn are selling them to investors with little interest in the community's needs. Recently, there's been a lot of talk about office buildings being turned into housing. While there are instances where owners and investors were able to make that transition, for most buildings in the triangle, the office to apartment transition is too expensive, according to most owners and developers. A school will require significant retrofitting, but the transformation may have a taxpayer benefit. On February 27th, Wells Fargo released a study that showed two-thirds of Americans have already decreased spending due to the economy. So for county officials to keep on floating bonds to build new schools should also be put on hold for now. No one wants to pay more taxes for anything when they are fighting uncertain financial forecasts. We have to start somewhere. Turning now to the news. After promising 158 new jobs, Clorox ends Durham expansion. Clorox is pulling out of a long-planned expansion in Durham, joining companies such as Bandwidth and Credit Suisse and canceling millions of dollars worth of incentives agreements that had been crafted to reel in their investments. Clorox was supposed to bring 158 new jobs to Durham with the relocation of its Better Health vitamins, minerals, and supplement business, but it never happened. In a letter to North Carolina Commerce Secretary Michelle Sanders, the company says a change in growth strategy related to the business line combined with the emergence of remote work left it unable to meet our employment growth targets. We've come to the realization that current conditions preclude us from meeting the growth targets specified in our incentives agreement, writes David Green, Vice President of Taxes and Assistant Treasurer, in a letter dated February 22nd. The company says it did exceed its capital investment goals, including through $4 million expansion of new office space on Pettigrew Street and a $9 million new R&D space on Strickland Street. Clorox told the state it remains committed to Durham, as its other locations, where it employs 520 full-time employees. In addition to being a global brand, Clorox is also the parent company of Burt's Bees in Durham. The expansion announcement by Clorox in November 2020 was seen as a sign of the state's economic resilience during the pandemic. North Carolina was so invested in enticing the company to grow its presence in Durham that it approved Clorox for more than $2.2 million in incentives. But on February 27th, the state's Economic Investment Committee voted to terminate the incentives deal. According to the North Carolina Department of Commerce, no dollars had been paid out to the company. Clorox joins a growing list of companies asking the state to cancel incentives in recent months. In Raleigh, Bandwidth voluntarily opted out of $34 million incentives agreement, tied to its 2020 announcement revealing plans for a new headquarters in the city. By not being beholden to the milestones dictated in the deal, the company has greater flexibility in where it hires, officials said earlier this year. Triangle Business Journal's Executive Voice column this week interviews Brian Strong. He's the director of the North Carolina Division of Parks and Recreation. Brian Strong began his tenure at the NC Division of Parks and Recreation in 2000 as an environmental review coordinator. Now he leads the entire division, which includes 580 permanent staff and over 735 seasonal and temporary staff. Strong had been acting director since early 2023 and was named director in August. Prior to that, he served as deputy director chief of planning and natural resources. The state park system encompasses 262,074 acres as of January 1st. That acreage includes 35 state parks, 4 state recreation areas, 25 state natural areas, 14 state trails, 7 state lakes, and 4 state rivers. The division also manages state-funded grants for trails and parks, including the Parks and Recreation Trust Fund and federally funded grant programs. How have your experiences prepared you for your current role? I have spent the last 24 years working for the division, and that has allowed me to witness how the state park system has evolved. Coming up through the ranks, similar to many of our field staff, has instilled in me a continued sense of pride in the division and our staff, especially seeing how we've adapted to challenges together. It has also allowed me to foster relationships with the various stakeholders in the division's mission. The system welcomed about 20.1 million visitors in 2023, an increase of 4% over the previous year. How does it attract more visitors each year? The biggest factor is likely our staff's dedication to our mission and to public service. Visitors see that shining through, and it encourages them to keep coming back. Our staff work hard to overcome obstacles and continually look for ways to be more efficient, more welcoming, and more accommodating to the public. The billions of dollars that the outdoor recreation industry contributes to North Carolina's economy show that there continues to be a high demand for access to natural spaces and public land. State parks, in particular, provide and promote low-cost outdoor recreation and educational opportunities to benefit North Carolina residents and visitors. We also continue to make improvements to facilities and amenities to provide new and better ways for the public to enjoy their favorite parks. What new initiatives are coming? Governor Roy Cooper and Department of Natural and Cultural Resources Secretary Reed Wilson have made education their focus this year, and that aligns with our mission to provide educational opportunities that promote the conservation of state's natural and cultural heritage. In particular, we have the ongoing Schools and Parks Initiative that aims to ensure that every public school student has a meaningful learning experience in a state park by the time they graduate. We're also excited about the executive order the governor signed that will conserve 1 million new acres and restore 1 million acres of forests and wetlands by 2040. We're also working on an outdoor recreation plan. North Carolina is required to update its statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan every 5 years to remain eligible for federal grants from the National Park Service. This year, we're celebrating the 30th anniversary of the creation of the Parks and Recreation Trust Fund. PARTF has provided much-needed funding to state parks as the system continues to grow, as well as provide financial support for outdoor recreation spaces for counties and municipalities. Are there plans to add more land? We have already added some acreage since the beginning of the year, and we will continue to do so throughout the year. What are the biggest challenges facing the park system? As North Carolina's population has grown, the state has continually lost open space to development and urbanization and risks outpacing our ability to conserve and protect areas of ecological concern. To some degree, urbanization has probably contributed to the high demand for parks and recreation as our residents get further and further away from access to their natural surroundings. That creates a mandate for the continued growth of the state park system. But at the same time, we always have to maintain a delicate balance between our conservation mission and our recreation mission. What are your greatest professional achievements? In my previous role as Deputy Director for Planning and Natural Resources, I oversaw the addition of 16 new park units, 9 new state trails, 1 state park, and 6 state natural areas. I also assisted with the acquisition of around 45,000 acres. Prior to that, I was the first program manager for the division's natural resources program, and in that role and subsequent ones, I helped increase the average acres of prescribed fire in the state park system from around 500 to around 7,000 acres a year. What are your goals as director? Continued expansion of the state park system is necessary for us to fulfill our mission. We're also always looking to improve operational efficiency. Both of these things will hopefully help us increase our natural and cultural resource stewardship. We also hope to make strides in making parks more accessible and more welcoming, especially to groups that have historically been underserved by parks and recreation facilities. This week's Project Life article concerns an effort to age in place. Cary, a Triangle community long recognized as the place for young families, is evolving its focus as the town's demographics shift to seniors over 65. This article by Connie Gentry. In terms of life expectancies, longer doesn't necessarily translate to better. The allure of the proverbial fountain of youth wasn't to live longer, it was to live longer with youthfulness, and that's not happening. Globally, the life expectancy is 20 years longer today than it was in 1960, when the average lifespan was 54 years. In Wake County, longevity is even greater, with the average life expectancy approaching a robust 82 years. However, the McKinsey Health Institute recently concluded that for each additional year of life an individual has, they likely experience 6 months in ill health. That math is nothing to be excited about. 50% of life in good health, 50% in moderate or poor health. The MHI report cites three fields of age-related non-communicable diseases as the underlying reason why people are less well as they grow older. Cardiometabolic diseases, cancers, and conditions related to mental illnesses, substance abuse, and neurological issues are the three areas that account for 65% of the NCD burden. On the bright side, MHI also suggests that each person could add 6 years of higher quality life by proactively embracing the drivers of health throughout life. The starting point to realize this potential, according to MHI, is in cities and municipalities where already more than half of the global population lives, and by 2050, 70% of the world's population is expected to live in cities and urban areas. The town of Cary is on board with the notion that aging in place with health and wellness is fully attainable and something that city governments need to be embracing. Cary is in many ways the quintessential young family suburb, working parents, two kids, all of that. But what's interesting is that we have very low turnover. People don't really leave Cary, says Sean Stegall, Cary town manager. The group of people that came to Cary in the 80s and 90s when we had our big boom are now in their late 50s and 60s or early 70s, and they're here to stay, which is causing us to make a lot of changes to meet a completely different population. Not only are people choosing to live out their lives here, seniors are relocating to this area for work and retirement. Nearly half, 46% of the population growth from 2010 through 2019 was 55 and older, according to Wake County. Traditionally, Cary was thought of as the community for young families moving into the Triangle. Now it's the oldest community in Wake County, Stegall says. We actually import more people every day than export. Outside of the Triangle's two major cities, Cary has the most senior citizens of any outlying community, some 24,000 residents, representing over 13% of the town's population. In many ways, we're going to be increasingly, dramatically more senior-oriented, he adds, noting the town is in the process of hiring its first position entirely dedicated to working with the senior community, and in addition to the existing senior center in West Cary, two new senior centers are being developed in Cary. Part of my budget message this year is that I fully expect our senior-oriented operations will be the largest growth area by far when it comes to town services in the next 5 years. It won't even be close. Now we can measure budgeting for senior programs in hundreds of thousands of dollars, but senior programming will be millions. The environment and sustainability have been the focus of the last 5 years. The next 5 years, aging will be the largest growth area, Stegall says. In November, the downtown Cary Park opened, which Stegall describes as a true multi-generational park. Spread across 7 acres, it features paved trails, interactive installations, performance areas, and programming for cardio, fitness, social engagement, and craft classes. Remaining physically active and socially engaged are critical factors for sustaining health and wellness as we age. The way we're dealing with the health issue is having a variety of quality of life initiatives, from the creation of more multi-generational parks and facilities. We're developing 50-some pickleball courts to providing online senior citizen programming. We learned during COVID how dangerous loneliness and isolation can be, so we've expanded the virtual program so people can engage as they age in ways we never would have contemplated before, he says. Changing a town's infrastructure to better serve an aging demographic is another key area where municipalities can impact health outcomes. In Cary, developing new sidewalks has been the biggest increase in capital infrastructure in the last 5 years, Stegall says. He adds that it's necessary for all pedestrians, but critical for seniors. A 72-year-old resident who came to Cary 30 years ago told him she's no longer comfortable driving to her neighborhood grocery store, and since there are no sidewalks, she can't walk there. That story is not an anomaly. That's a very typical thing, so we have a real imperative to construct sidewalks in areas where we didn't have them, he says. Because the demographics are going to be so skewed, it will impact everything we do. It will change the nature of the fire department, the police department, and our services. It will shift us into the types of activities that are more sustainable as people age. The actions Cary is taking are indicative of what progressive cities around the world are doing. For instance, MHI noted a public-private partnership in New York City that addressed food security, delivering fresh produce to underserved homes. Miami created a similar partnership to develop an extreme heat action plan and appointed a chief heat officer to lead the initiatives in combat heat-related illnesses and deaths. Big number this week, $2.4 billion. That's roughly the amount of money Vietnamese electric vehicle manufacturer VinFast, which is planning a $4 billion plant in Chatham County, reported losing for fiscal year 2023. $83 million. That's how much Lennar Corp. of Miami has spent on land in Durham, Garner, and Knightdale to build a new residential communities and add homes to current communities. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.